Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike D'Antoni along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:40 for our triple option feature. Got a lot of things going on in the sports world today. Certainly a lot to do with the transfer portal. We'll talk to different people across the country, get their opinions on it. But we're going to start right off the bat in Phoenix, Arizona. We got with us on the line from the Rebel Walk, Evelyn Van Pelt. Evie, glad you made it in. I was wondering if you had made it or not. So welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL.
Thank you all so much for having me. I did make it. I landed. I've been here kind of getting my bearings. I think they're about to have the Miami players do some interviews, and then the Ole Miss players will arrive in a little bit. And so it's all good, and it's all getting underway.
Even before we start talking this, let me just tell the listening audience, because this broke just minutes ago, but the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh have kind of split paths. So John Harbaugh, the head football coach of the Baltimore Ravens, is out. And so there'll be another opening in the NFL. I don't think Coach Harbaugh is going to be unemployed for much period of time. I think he'll get a job pretty quickly there. But it goes to show you kind of the shelf life, I guess, all of us live in one way or another. Is going to come to that point. But John Harbaugh out in Baltimore, so the Ravens will have a new head coach in 2026. Evelyn, I've watched a lot of Sugar Bowls. And I said this immediately. I had to do a national show and then doing stuff with WWL. That performance by Trinidad Chambliss, it goes on the Mount Rushmore of Sugar Bowl performances. How impressed? Because you got to see him all year long, every game, all the plays. But what he did in that game, in the biggest spotlight you could get put in to that point, for him to come up that big was just remarkable. One big play after another. And he's the coolest cucumber in the bunch. I mean, cool as, you know, the other side of the pillar. He was fantastic.
He really was. And I tell you what, you know, you're right. We've watched him all season. You know, he came in, he didn't play the first two games of the season. He was on the bench and then played in the Arkansas game. What a performance. And there have been some incredible quarterback performances in the Sugar Bowl. So to be on up there, I'm with you. That was absolutely amazing. And what I really was struck by is when Ole Miss played Georgia on the road in Athens and they lost, they were held scoreless, I believe, in the fourth quarter, and Georgia scored like 17 points. So Ole Miss had been up by nine going into that. And Trinidad, all week leading up to that and the media opportunities we had with him, you know, he's just said, that was on me. You know, I think he missed one pass to Daquan Wright in the fourth quarter that could have been a little, you know, turning point there. But he just said, that was on me, and I'm just not going to let that happen again. And by gosh, if he didn't, you know, if he wasn't true to his word, because that, you know, that one series in the fourth quarter, you know, those three plays in a row where he's running around, you know, Johnny Manziel like that, that was incredible to see.
What is the main thing Ole Miss has got to do to play up against Miami? And the physicality of Miami has changed throughout the year. They were a quarterback-dependent team offensively around Carson Beck. And then this isn't going to work. This isn't how we built. We built to run the football and pop you in the mouth, and we're going to run the ball. And, you know, Carson's going to be a big part of it, but he doesn't have to be the main part each and every week. What does the Ole Miss defense, because I thought in the first half, Evelyn, they had opportunities to stop Georgia and didn't make the tackle.
They did.
And so give us your big, you know, plus that they have to have against the Hurricanes.
You know, it was funny. I didn't tease them, but I asked a bunch of the kids, a bunch of the players, the Sugar Bowl media week, what are you going to do to make Georgia punt the ball one time at least? Because Georgia didn't punt one time the first time they played, not one time. And they all talked about, you know, communication. And I just think that, you know, it helps them that truly that they play in the SEC. So in terms of physicality, I don't know that that's going to be, I mean, I do know what, I think Miami has two defensive linemen who are projected to go in the top, you know, 21 picks of the draft. So, you know, I mean, they are big and physical. I just think that they're going to have to, you know, look, they have an advantage because they have a Trinidad who Miami's going to have to account for him. I mean, I know they're going to be rushing him, but that the guy is really good under pressure, and obviously his feet are so good. But they're just going to have to, that offensive line, they're going to have to minimize their mistakes. The defensive line, I think they're going to have to try and get some pressure on him. I mean, I guess it sounds cliche, but I think it just starts in the trenches, and they are big. Miami is big and physical, and you're right, they'll pop you in the mouth, and you got to be ready to get back up. And that's one thing with this Ole Miss defense that we're seeing, at least in the latter part of the season, a lot of bend but don't break. And so you wish they wouldn't bend, but you know, I tell you what, if you would have asked probably anybody out there with Georgia at 30, Ole Miss up 34-31 in the fourth quarter and Georgia having first and goal, I'm not sure anybody would have thought that the Ole Miss defense would stop them and hold them to a field goal. But I just, you know, what they've all told me is they've just got to focus on their keys and they've got to communicate, and we'll see.
Evelyn, the last 45 days has been you caught in the vortex of the tornado. Oh. Covering Ole Miss and the Ole Miss fan base, and now the aftershocks, you know, Ole Miss fans and LSU fans, and it's back and forth, that sort of thing. But to cover that, I think that's a much more difficult situation than people might think if you're in charge like Pete Golding is, because you want to try to, as much as you can, keep that outside noise away. Listen to us. Listen to the one voice here, okay, because I'm your head coach now. But it's hard to tune out everything else that's happening. And you're talking about, for older people, that's difficult. Okay, for people your age, my age, and I'm older than you, but think about when you 18 and 20 mm-hmm. and 23, how easily distracted you are. How has it been? How have they been affected by all of this around them and yet still continuing to win?
You know, it's so funny. You literally took the words out of my mouth. I've been saying, and I've had people tell me, oh, well, you know, they get paid all this money. They're professionals. And I'm said, you know what? They're 18 to 22, 23-year-old kids. Yeah, they have a nice bank account, but that doesn't make their emotions and their mentality any more mature than 18 to 23-year-old kids. And I mean, it was overwhelming. I mean, you're right. The vortex, it was like a hurricane and a tsunami and every kind of force of nature you could think of. And, you know, and these kids started off the beginning of the year, you know, Corey Adams from Edna Carr High School, freshman on the team, got killed. And I mean, that's how they started their, you know, right before they started their season. And they've just, I think, they're a very mature team, and they're very tough. And that's one thing Pete has talked about is he really likes about them. They really like each other. They're really tight with each other, and they're no nonsense, and they don't let things get to them. But you're right. I mean, when you see the coach's family, you know, traveling around Baton Rouge when he's still your head coach, you know, and I mean, I can't tell you how many calls and texts and every messages I would get about it. I can't imagine, you know, what those players were going through. So I give them a lot of credit.
The biggest key to win against Miami, and we talked about the physicality, winning in the trenches, but I think the big thing here is to try to make Miami one-dimensional. Force them to say, okay, I'm not going to let you run the ball against me. If you're going to beat me with Carson Beck. Would you think that is the philosophy defensively? Because you don't want Miami to get a running game going, because then they got you in the rocking chair. Mm-hmm. You got no chance at that particular point. But I think the key has to be Ole Miss defensively. Stop the run of Miami.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's just, you know, and my gosh, you know, nobody, I want to say the Hurricanes are only giving up something crazy like 13.1 points per game, fourth best in FBS. Nobody scored more than 24 points. points against them in like a non-overtime game, that's going to be, I mean, they held, A&M offense had been averaging 36 points a game. They held them to a field goal. And then, you know, of course they held Ohio State to only 14 points. So I just, you know, part of it, I think I have the ball. They're going to have to score. You know, they're going to have to find a way to score when they have the ball. Ole Miss is, but absolutely, I think make them, if you can find a way to make them one dimensional, and you know that is no easy task.
And then also, Evie, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Ole Miss's offense. I don't know if anyone's necessarily expecting Trinidad Chambliss to throw another performance like that against a really good Miami defense, but the importance of Kiwan Lacy, who recently re-upped with Ole Miss, he's committed to the Rebel program for 26, but he had a really strong performance against Georgia too, maybe quietly because Trinidad was so good, but just under 100 rushing yards on 22 carries, a pair of rushing touchdowns as well. He's been fantastic all year, obviously. Going up against an elite Miami rushing defense, I think that's going to be a key matchup as well.
Oh, boy, I think so, too. You know, the first time he played against Georgia, he only had 31 yards total. And I think that kind of, you know, that kind of stuck with him in Trinidad. I think might have had four. I think as a team, they only had 88 yards total rushing the first time that they played Georgia. And so, you know, I think that was a focus. They knew that they were going to have to be able, you know, to kind of establish that ground game. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think probably, you know, just that duo there. And I tell you what, Kiwan Lacy, besides being an incredible running back, is elite at his pass blocking. And we asked him about that earlier this week. And he said, you know, I played defense all my life, you know, until I got here. And I love to hit people, you know, so I thought that was kind of funny. You know, maybe that's the mentality you want. But, yeah, absolutely, you're right.
He's the hammer. He's the hammer. and you get it after a while with him. Last thing for you before we let you go, and we appreciate your time today because I know it's limited, but a lot of people, and I guess maybe some purple and gold bias with this thought, that Ole Miss is going to go away after this year. But, okay, if you can get Trinidad Chambliss, the NCAA, to give him the ruling correctly, which I think now he got the right lawyer, he's going to get that.
Man, Tom Mars.
Tom is really good at what he does, Evelyn.
Yeah, he is.
And Lacey's already said, I'm coming back. And then people forget Pete Golding is a really good recruiter. Now, calling plays and all, that's all an art form, and we'll see how that works out. But what they've done this early in the portal period has been really impressive. And I told this to Charlie. That was one LSU lineman I wanted as Carius Kern.
Right.
Because that dude can play. Now, they screwed the pooch with him at LSU. Okay, he was just a true freshman. But he's going to have – he's a tremendously talented young man. But his technique is all off. I don't know what they were trying to teach him. But this is sustainable for me, because you got to go year to year. I don't think you can look 5 years down the road. You got to look one year. You get Chambliss back and Kiwan, and what they're doing in the portal, Evelyn, we might be talking again at this time next year about this Ole Miss team.
I tell you what, I think, you know, they've got all their defensive guys coming back. You know, there was a lot of talk. I think a lot of Ole Miss people even thought defensive lineman Prince William Onmielen might end up at LSU. And he announced, I believe, yesterday that he's returning. So they've got him and Will Eccles and Savion Harris and Jamarius Brown. So that's, and then he's picked up some nice defensive additions, and secondary, you know, they're working on that secondary. They gotta work on that. But I think the defense as a whole will be great. But I think the offense, if you have Chambliss and Lacy, I mean, it'd be hard to bet against those two.
I agree. And now you've gotten a taste of it, of being in the spotlight. And okay, who knows what happens in the Fiesta Bowl or possibly beyond. But, man, that is a great motivation, because Ole Miss is walking on uncharted ground now that they've never walked down sort of, well, early in my lifetime, let me put it to you that way, but
right,
not since.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, credit to Pete. He's keeping them focused. You know, my gosh, I thought when right before the half they had some mismanagement of the clock, they didn't get a field goal kick against Georgia, left 3 points out there, and I'm like, oh, man. And Georgia started off the second half with the ball, and I thought this could get bad. And they rallied, and they don't quit, and they don't give up. I think a lot of that comes from Pete Golding, and he manages to be intense but also not stress them out. So I think credit to him, and Charlie Weiss is doing a great job, you know, calling the plays. So we'll see, you know, let's roll the dice and go.
Evelyn, I hope we're talking next week at the same time. I know what that would mean if we're talking at this point next week. Thanks so much for joining us, and be safe.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks,
all
Evie.
Right, thank you. Evelyn Van Pelt does a great job for the Rebel Walk and covers the Ole Miss football team. And Charlie has a lot more interest in Louisiana about Ole Miss than ever before in my lifetime.
No, listen, the moving back and forth, and I think a lot of surprises recently in the portal as well, Mike. When Lane Kiffin decides to come to LSU, I think a lot of people thought it was a foregone conclusion that Chambliss and Lacey would be following him there. Not so fast, as they like to say.
Not so quick. And,
right.
And Chambliss even admitted yesterday, I did think about it.
Right.
I did think about it. So you understand the dynamics with him, and he's got a bigger fish to fry because he's got to get the NCAA to basically give him another year of eligibility. I don't see why the NCAA wouldn't, but I mean, I don't want to get into that. It's not like Bobby in a tangent with that. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 7 o'clock, got a special Saints Hour with Mike Hoss. He's got some great interviews that he's picked up for us here. Chase Young is one of them, along with Taliese Fuaga, Cam Jordan, Charlie Smith, going on and on. Mike does a great job getting all those interviews. And so 7 o'clock tonight, right here on the Big 870, you can hear Mike Hoss in those interviews with a number of the players on the New Orleans Saints football team. And repeating what we talked about in our first segment, John Harbaugh, the head football coach of the Baltimore Ravens, is out in Baltimore in 18 seasons, 180 wins, 113 losses, 13-11 in postseason and a Super Bowl title, but kind of everybody got a shelf life. And you kind of had a feeling, Charlie and I talked about this, whoever lost that game, they probably weren't going to be coaching the same team in 2026. So John Harbaugh, unemployed, but not for long. It's like the NFL. He's not for long to be hired by somebody else, and I think he'll end up doing a great job wherever he ends up. We'll be back with more Sports Talk. Glenn West will join us. A lot of portal information. We're still waiting on Sam Levitt's decision about LSU. We'll talk to Glenn about it and go 247 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Man, it's been a wild day, and it's going to be like that for another week and a half or so, transfer portal. And so we have on the line with us from Go247, Glenn West. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Glenn, right off the bat, I'm going to ask you about Sam Levitt, because it seemingly this is all chips in for Sam. Got to watch him play last couple years at Arizona State, and watching him, people always want a comp. My comp, easy, Jackson Dart. He's very similar to Jackson. I think Jackson's probably a little taller. Sam's a little thicker. But they both do one thing in college that they really like. Intermediate to longer throws, they better than the short throws. And they pass up a short throw that's easy to try to hit a big play downfield. Now, he's coming off the Lisfranc surgery, and so you gather that that's going to be a few months before he's able to really hit stride with it. But your thoughts on the addition, because I think sometime this afternoon or tonight, we'll find out exactly. Your thoughts on Sam Levitt to LSU?
Yeah, that sure would be nice if we got that answer here in the next couple hours, because I think the longer that it drags out when he leaves campus, you know, the more likely it is for him to consider other options. But from everything that I've heard and everything everybody I've talked to, it sounds like LSU is going to get this over the finish line. They've been meeting with him really since yesterday afternoon. Took him out to dinner last night at a really fancy restaurant. He's been in the building a lot today, meeting with different coaches and personnel people. And I think that LSU, this was always their guy. This was always the guy that I think they had circled. You know, I know they kicked the tires there on Brendan Sorsby. I know if Chambliss had not decided to re-up with Ole Miss and had gotten his waiver, that would have been certainly an option they would have considered and pursued. But I think that he's an ideal fit. And, you know, you mentioned the comp with the quarterback you mentioned just now. The one I've kind of gotten the last couple of days is Bo Nix. You know, Bo Nix in 2022 when he was at Auburn, maybe the year before that he went to Oregon and became a really great player. That's kind of where I think a lot of the NFL and a lot of the college scouts kind of see Sam Leavitt at right now. You know, a guy that has all the athletic traits, like you mentioned, can make the intermediate and deep throws. But just the accuracy is maybe the part of his game where he really needs to develop here over the next couple seasons. And I think that's where I think LSU can really make a great pitch to him, is that, you know, he can come in. We're going to have a great scheme, a great group of players around you. They've already started adding wide receivers and running backs left and right. They're trying to replenish those rooms. So I think he's going to have a lot going for him if he comes back or if he comes here. And, you know, the one caveat I would throw is that injury that you mentioned. I mean, those Lisfranc are a real tough one from a healing process, from a healing perspective, because there's just not a whole lot of blood flow that gets down to your foot in that area. So the way that I've kind of heard it, he very well could miss most, if not all, of spring ball with that injury, which, you know, with the brand new team and all these new players, could certainly take him a little while to get fully, you know, immersed into this system and with these players. So there's certainly some risk, but I think the potential there far outweighs any kind of risk or concerns, because he does have a lot of special talent.
One thing, Glenn, Charlie and I are going to save this. We had an interview with him at Manning camp, and he talks about having to improve his short game. And because I told Charlie, he reminds me so much of Jackson, because that was what Jackson told me literally the year before, that, you know, hey, he's like, you're right. Oh, I could throw. I like the deeper throw. I like the intermediate throw. But, you know, I'm still working on touch in the short throws, and both guys can run with the ball. And so there's a little parallel between him and Darton, and certainly with Nix also. One guy I did see play a lot, Ty Benefield. From Boise State. And so, man, I'm trying to do television with Bobby and I and Rich Marty, and people are saying, well, compare him to A.J. Halsey. No, he's a different player. He's a more of a rangy, linear guy, sort of a thin build. But what is so impressive with Ty is his ability to get up into the seam and make a play against the run. A lot of guys built that way. That's not their forte. They more kind of chop their steps and then try to, you know, catch you, so to speak, lower body. Man, he pops you. He's a really good open field tackler. You know, and certainly some genetics there. His dad played in the CFL for a long time, had a cup of coffee in the NFL. And being a former receiver, you can see his range, how he tracks the ball in flight. That, to me, of all the signees so far, Benefield, to me, and they haven't signed Leavitt yet, he has been the big splash, because that guy, he ain't watching. He's playing day one. He's going to be the starter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think what's so great about him is that he does a lot of his work around the line of scrimmage. And if you're LSU, you're losing Harold Perkins this year at the star. I think it just makes all the sense in the world to slide a guy like Ty Benefield into that spot, or maybe you kind of rename it and you make it a nickel safety or something like that instead of a true star. But I feel like he is the perfect blend of a guy that can blow up plays in the backfield and then also be able to really drop in coverage and make plays in the deep end of the field as well. I mean, he's just a really well-versed player, a guy that I think looks at the mold of a guy like Monster Delane this last year. If Delane at this time a year ago, you know, people thought that he might be kind of that day two draft pick kind of prospect. But he really took a chance on LSU, and he took what Corey Raymond and those guys were preaching to heart, and he turned himself into a first-round pick this year. And I think Benefield looks at that, you know, kind of blueprint that Lane took this last year and says, well, why can't I do the same thing? You know, I'm a really talented player. And so I think that this system, and certainly with what LSU has proven to be in the past in the secondary, what they've been, what they were this last year in the secondary, you know, they're going to have so many of those guys returning now with Pickett and Woodland, and you know, it's Marcus Cooley and Deshaun Spears. You really rounded out with a guy like, you know, Brentfield, who's just a really great overall player and a guy that can make a lot of things happen, both in the backfield and in the deep part of the field. I think he's a home run hit for LSU. And to this point, he's definitely LSU's top signing.
You got one thing y'all can't teach him: instincts. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can be big and you can be fast and you can be strong, but if you don't know what the hell you're doing, it doesn't do you a heck of a lot of good. He's instinctive, and you can tell. He knows what to do out on the field. One guy that's, that they brought in today on the defensive line, Stephelian Green, I remember when he came out of, I think he's from Rome, Georgia. He was a big-time high school recruit, redshirted year one. I thought he played really well as a redshirt freshman. Last year, I can't tell you one dude on that Clemson defensive line that played well. And I think, Lynn, that was the disappointment. We were looking at, you know, with Parker coming back and Peter Woods and Green, that, man, that would be the strength of their team. They get the transfer guy from Purdue. None of them played well. Not a one. This is a young man with talent. Now the refinement in him has got to be done at LSU.
Yeah, he's played 2 years. He's got 2 years of eligibility left. And I think that's kind of a common theme that you're seeing with a lot of these guys that LSU is bringing in. I think, you know, the safety, you know, kind of is the maybe the lone exception. But they're bringing in a lot of guys that have multiple years of experience, but also multiple years of eligibility left. And I think that a lot of these guys, you know, LSU's kind of pitching, you know, not only just being here for 2026, but developing in our program, developing in our this system, and staying for 2027 as well. And so I know you can't project out that far, and there's just so much stuff that kind of, you know, changes things on a year-to-year basis. But, you know, a guy like Green, you know, he's had some bright moments. You know, he was actually the, I believe he was the leading tackler in the Clemson game for Clemson in that game against LSU. He had, I think, 6 of his 18 tackles that in that game against LSU. He did a really nice job in that game. I think he's going to be a guy, when you look at, you're replacing Jacobian Guillory, you're replacing Bernard Gooden, somebody on the interior that can just kind of, you know, eat some space, but also have some power and ability to get into the backfield as well. I believe he had 2.5 or 3 sacks this last year as well. He's somebody that I think is really intriguing, and I think can round out that defensive line room really well, because I will say, like, I think that they're going to want these freshmen to play pretty early if they're able to, like Richard Anderson, Lamar Brown, you know, maybe Deuce Gerald. They're really high on that group of players. If you're able to surround those guys with some players that have played for a little bit and have some experience, I think that it's going to make for a really, really entertaining and interesting defensive line room next year.
Glenn, it seems like LSU has been addressing a lot of different spots, the running back position, wide receiver, defensive line, safety, as we've mentioned throughout the call here. But one spot that they haven't necessarily addressed just yet, and I feel like it's the one that they need to add maybe the most bodies, is the offensive line. Just want to get your thoughts on that spot for this Tiger team, because a ton of different names from last year's unit entered the transfer portal. Some have already found new homes. Mike had already mentioned Kerryus Kern going to Ole Miss, Ori Williams landing in Tennessee. But just your thoughts on LSU's offensive line for 2026 and how many pieces that they need to add there, because it seems like one of those major roster holes early on. But obviously you can address it in the portal.
Yeah, if quarterback is kind of the 1A that you need to go get right, if you're LSU, I would put offensive line as the 1B. I mean, they're right behind quarterback in terms of the most important position here that LSU has to go attack, and maybe closing on Leavitt will help them in that respect. You know, they'll have a, you know, a star quarterback that they can preach to a lot of these O-linemen. They obviously have the scheme. They'll have a lot of the past success offensively that this offensive staff has had. So maybe that'll help them in their pitches to go get some of these offensive linemen. But it's been a little bit more of a slow burn. You know, they've been bringing guys in. They've been having them on visits. And, you know, I think it's also been kind of interesting because a lot of these offensive linemen really haven't started entering the portal or announcing their intentions to enter the portal until the portal opened. I mean, up until the January 2nd date where the portal really opened, I mean, Carius Kern was the top-rated offensive lineman, and then the next highest guy was a three-star. I mean, they haven't really been filing into the portal as much up until the last couple of days. So I think LSU is just kind of biding its time there. They know that they got to go out and get several starters. They got to get a tackle. They got to get a couple guards. They got Braylon Moore that I think they're finalizing a deal with to return. They've got Weston Davis back in the fold. Solomon Thomas is an interesting young player that can return for LSU as well. But they've got to replenish. They've got to go get older. They got to go get more experience. And I think you'll certainly see that turn, that corner start to be turned if they're able to close here on Leavitt and really kind of centralize their focus on the offensive line, because it's really, really important that they go get several guys that can start and also probably some added depth players as well.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised maybe to try to tap into that Ole Miss roster when that season comes open there too.
Yeah.
That's going to be the Pandora box too. Last question for you, Glenn. Lance Hurd, because a lot of people have asked me, would Lance Hurd return to LSU? My thing is, he'd certainly have a spot. And, man, watching that dude, he got some talent. Now, again, the technical part still is a work in progress with him, but he was the most highly rated offensive lineman, him and Campbell sort of coming out different times. But, man, you talk about a guy with some talent. That is Lance Hurd. Any connection you've heard between LSU and Lance Hurd?
None that's concrete. I think, you know, if he wants to play left tackle, I mean, that's the reason he left LSU a couple of years ago, is because he wanted to play left tackle. Well, left tackle is wide open right now for the taking. So I think the thing with Hurd here is teams are weighing how much he's asking for in the transfer portal versus, you know, how much they actually really want to spend on him and make him kind of the all-in, you know, kind of go for it kind of starting left tackle. I mean, those guys aren't cheap. And so, you know, I think that evaluation process with him is still ongoing. I'd be a big proponent of bringing him back and finishing his career at LSU. I think that would make a lot of sense. But I think it also just has to come down to what LSU feels like they can spend at that position, what they feel like, you know, he could offer them at that position, and if that matches what they feel would be a good value to them, then I think that they absolutely would, you know, could pursue that opportunity. But he's going to be a guy that's going to have a lot of teams after him. I think he's very much kind of weighing and sitting back and weighing all of his options. I think he just officially entered the portal yesterday, so I'm sure he's fielding a lot of calls. His agents are fielding a lot of calls. So I would certainly be on board with that, but I don't have any concrete intel that LSU has made a serious, serious push yet for him.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. We used to always think, you know, after the first of the year, unless you were looking for coaches, it was sort of a dead period. You know, not a lot going on.
I missed that.
That didn't change, brother. That changed.
Yeah, the next couple of weeks is going to be a lot of time on the old laptop, but wouldn't happen any other way until LSU fills that roster.
God bless him, brother. It gives us content, Glenn.
Yes,
content.
Sir.
And that's fantastic. And this isn't a one-year deal. This is going to be every year, maybe not to this extent, but we are walking on land we haven't walked on before with all this transfer portal stuff.
They don't call him the Portal King for nothing, or he doesn't call himself the Portal King for nothing. So I feel like it's a lot more of this to come, guys.
Yes, sir. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. Always do a great job, buddy. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Glenn.
All righty. Glenn West does a fantastic job for Go247 Sports. And boy, man, things fast and furious in the transfer portal period. And I think 24 hours from now, we'll know one way or another about Sam Leavitt. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, I want to thank Evelyn Van Pelt from the Rebel Walk, along with Glenn West. Does a great job covering the LSU Tigers for Go247. Got a lot more sports talk. We'll talk about John Harbaugh being fired from the Ravens. And Mark Schlereth will join us at 5:20 right here on the Big 870 WWL.